Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now. Hi again. And welcome to the Overcoming Emotional Eating podcast. In today's episode, I talk about worry and what we can do with our worry besides food and eating, turning essentially to each other and to other areas of comfort is one way to thrive during this time. Take a listen. So thank you everyone for joining me for this another edition. I guess I think it's the third edition, so to speak, of our Thriving Through Uncertainty series, which was not a series that any of us, even me, knew was happening, obviously, but we are rolling with it, and I am here to support you as you all have moved from normal everyday life to shift in whatever way that you have. And in speaking with, I actually did a great interview with a woman who's been in the field for actually longer than me, 35 years today, and I will post that on my podcast in a few weeks. But when we were speaking together, I recognized how often we don't just simply hit the nail on the head when it comes to eating and emotions. And what I wanted to do tonight was really hit the nail on the head when it comes to a specific emotion that we're all feeling. Even the steadiest of eddies, so to speak, are feeling a bit of worry nowadays. Some of us are feeling lots and lots of worry. And in that, I wanted to bring some information about worry. What is worry and what does it feel like and what can you do about it? And there are some subsets of worry when it comes to, you know, obviously worry can move into anxiety. And I wanted to talk a little bit more cognitively about this emotion, what we know happens with emotions when we feel them intensely. If we have an emotional connection to food, it can spill into our behaviors with food. So understanding what emotions we're feeling, where they're coming from and why, and what we can do about them is priceless right now. And I felt like just hitting the nail on the head tonight and talking about the pink elephant in the room that's happening for all of us. And that emotion is worry. You know, as human beings, we have this amazing ability to think about future events, right? And thinking ahead means that we can anticipate obstacles or problems. It gives us the opportunity to plan solutions, which we all love. When it helps us to achieve our goals, thinking ahead is really helpful. Right. For example, right now, hand washing, social distancing, they're helpful things. And we can decide to do them in order to prevent the spread of the virus. However, worrying is a way of thinking ahead that often leaves us feeling anxious or apprehensive. Worrying can be when we have focused on something that we cannot change or control or have a say or a hand in. When we worry, it can feel like a chain of thoughts and images. And what I'd love for you all to do who are with me today is to really think about how your worry takes place. And I will bring this into food and food patterns in just a minute, I promise, as I always do. But I wanted to just hit the nail on the head and talk about worry for a few minutes. So when you think about worry as a chain of events, I want you to think about an image that is relatable for you. So for some people, it's actually a link chain, right, for you. For other people, it could be cars on a train, like the railroad cars that you see, one links to the next, links to the next, links to the next. In whatever way, I really want you to visualize your worry chain or train as we go through this. Because it will help you as you understand what you're feeling and why. I'm going to call it a worry chain because that's how I visualize it. But it can be anything that you want.
Some people experience worry as uncontrollable, and it seems like that worry can take on a life of its own. And right now, for many of us, we are being derailed regularly from what's going on around us, from social media to what a family member or friend might say, to even going to the grocery store. In being completely honest, I went to the grocery store Saturday for the first time in a week or so, and was derailed by the fact that everyone in my grocery store had masks on. We are not, where I live, we are not mandated to wear them. And I had not heard of that yet. And so was derailed a little bit by actually recognizing that, wow, there is a lot of people with masks on, and I feel a little bit like I just jumped off my planet onto another one. So I totally understand how we could all be feeling this, right? So what we want to think about is what your worry chain is. Where does it come from? Have you noticed any thoughts, right? So it could be, and I'm going to give a really simple example that maybe you've had. An example might be, you know, I have a headache. And that thought is going to lead to another thought. In this case, it might be, you know, what if it's the coronavirus? Now, whenever you have a what if statement, we always know it's fear-based. We know that it's not fact. But in this case, you can see how I have a headache moves to what if it's the virus. And then the next thought would be, maybe I passed it on to everyone at work yesterday, or maybe I brought it to my family member. And what will I do then? And then the next thought might be, oh my gosh, everyone will pass that on to somebody else. And then, you know, everyone will die and I'm going to be responsible for it. And then the emotion comes out in anxiety. You see, worry isn't just in our heads. I mean, I'm following a chain of thoughts that maybe you've had. I know many people I know have had this thought, whether it was their child that was sick or themselves that were sick. And we know that a thought can go to a thought, can go to a thought, and essentially it winds up in an emotion. And we know that worry just isn't in our heads. We know when it becomes excessive, we can feel anxiety in our bodies too. And this is something I spoke about on an interview last week. Physical symptoms of worry and anxiety are really held in our body. And this is why you actually might eat with worry. And I'll explain in just a second. But we know that physical anxiety and worry can create muscle tension or even aches and pains for some people because you're not recognizing that you're clenching. So you may be clenching your jaw or clenching your fists or keeping your shoulders up. I know I keep my shoulders up when I'm tense, and I'm recognizing that more and more of, wow, okay, keep them down, keep the shoulders down. And people can even get aches and pains from clenching and tensing so much. For other people, worry and anxiety can show up as restlessness or an inability to relax, a difficulty concentrating. For some people, difficulty sleeping. I'm not sure how many people are sleeping so great these days. And or feeling easily fatigued because, one, you're not getting that sleep, and two, you might be in a cortisol adrenaline cycle all the time, right? And so recognizing how it's being held in your body, recognizing your thought pattern, and really recognizing your emotions right now, as much as we would love to run from them. I mean, I think if I really took a poll, everybody, whether, you know, 1 year old to 101, would love to just run from all of this right now. At least I would. But we can't. We're here and we're in it and we're all trying to figure it out together as much as possible, I hope. Anything can be a trigger for worry. And right now, there's so many different triggers, right? Whether it's your health, whether it's somebody you know's health, whether it's numbers, whether you've been laid off, whether it's finances, whether it's your business. I mean, there's so many different arenas. And then we've got triggers coming in all over the place. I actually talked to a friend the other day who said she was going to take a break from Facebook and social media completely for the next week. She figured she'd hear of anything she needed to hear about, but it was taking such an emotional and psychological toll on her, she couldn't be present for her family. And I commended her for that, because the truth is we have enough people around us right now that are really you know, keeping involved and engaged in everything, that she would hear about anything big. We know that worry and anxiety are triggered by things that are ambiguous, things that are novel and new, and things that are unpredictable. Sounds like the times, doesn't it? We know that any of those things can create worry, anxiety. Right now, we're in all of them. It's very familiar, and it's really creating a lot of worry and anxiety. When we look at worry and anxiety, there's really two different types, and I want to explain this because it's important to recognize as we're home, if you're practicing social distancing, if you're an essential worker and you're going into the office, you have different worries potentially, but all of us have worries. It's important to recognize which type of worry you're actually in. I recognize that people can be moving from one worry to the next. And it's important to remember that there are two types. One is actually current, or what we call real world problems, real problem worries, I should say, not real world problems, real problem worries. They're about actual problems that need solutions right now, right? In the moment, right? So do I not have enough hand soap to make sure that everybody can, you know, wash their hands in our house? Am I making sure that we are, you know, keeping our distance, that if we're out riding bikes or things of that nature, that we're doing everything in a responsible fashion, right? What's the real problem worries right now? Those are things that you can put effort towards and help you feel like you can take your worry and move it into action, which can really be beneficial with those type of worries. However, there's another case in point when it comes to worrying, and those are called hypothetical worries. About the current health crisis, it might include about thinking about the worst, right? Catastrophizing. It's very easy in what's happening in our country right now to really move to the low, what I call the lowest common denominator in our brain, and crash. You know, imagining worst case scenarios with respect to, you know, people dying, or the number of people dying, or the people dying that you love, and that is the worst case scenario of worrying. Can we control that? We can't. And those hypothetical worries are the ones that I want you to try to tame. And I know that that's really difficult. I know what I'm asking is difficult, but first and foremost, even if you can't tame it, understanding when you're worrying which one you're in. Even if you just start with that, which I know might sound minuscule, but it's really not. Because you see, the more we're aware of our emotion, and the more that we're in the emotion and aware of it, the less we do a behavior. You know, my concern in all of this, and I have many of them, but one of my greatest concerns is how in the world are we going to come out of this psychologically? And I know I don't hear many people talking about that at all, but based on the fact that that's what one of my degrees is in, and the love I have for people and their psyche and their soul, I'm so concerned about people's mental health and what this is doing. One of the ways that we can take our brain back right now is to become aware of when we're worrying, what are we worrying about? Is it the real problem worries? Is it the things I can actually control that are affecting me right now? Or is it the hypothetical worries? Trying to stay in the real problem worries will enable you to at least feel some sense of control and some sense of empowerment. There's no right amount of worry right now, so please don't compare. If you're talking to a neighbor and they're not worried at all, I don't have anybody in my life that's like that, but let's say there is, don't compare. You're not wrong in where you are. Wherever you are on the continuum of spectrum of kind of what we call, quote, you know, low to normal worry to excessive worry, there is no right or wrong. And I would even venture to say that looking for a diagnosis of anxiety at this point in time for anybody would be hard to find, because all of us are in a heightened state of awareness, a heightened state of worry. Natural for you to worry at the moment. But if you feel that it's becoming excessive and taking over your life, if it's really making you have a difficult, you know, struggle to sleep, having difficulty connecting with other people, obviously please reach out, find a telehealth counselor in your area. But here are some things that you can do, right? First, identify whether that problem is a real problem to worry about or that hypothetical worry. And I'm not downgrading the hypothetical worry. I just want you to understand that you have no control over some of those and that that can be really difficult to sit in, because that's truly where anxiety happens, right? When you worry, and at all times, speak to yourself with compassion, because the truth is we're all in really uncharted waters right now. We know that. And traditionally speaking, there is no tradition right now. So whatever works for you, work it. Speak with yourself with love and compassion. Worry can come from a place of concern. We can worry about others and their health because we care about them. We love them. We can worry about our own health because we care about us. And so be easy on yourself. It's imperative during this time, because right now we know that we're all in this together and we're all struggling. So go easy on you and give yourself grace. There are a number of things that you can do to help with this worry. Now, as I mentioned, as we know, with respect to overeating or eating in a destructive pattern, that can happen because you're feeling an emotion. Right now, everyone's feeling an emotion. And if worry happens to be, or anxiety happens to be, your trigger for eating, it is a way difficult time. And I totally understand that. Even for people that aren't emotional eaters are winding up becoming emotional eaters. I was actually interviewed by a gentleman who has a 500 businessmen who and women who follow him on Facebook. And he interviewed me because he said, you know, even many of these people, some who were emotional eaters before, a lot that were not, they're struggling with their emotional eating. They've never worked from home before. Their fridge is staring them in the face every day and they don't know what to do. Will you come on my show so I can interview you? And I gladly did that. So recognizing where you are, what your triggers are and what that means for you is imperative. And there are other things besides eating or doing an addictive pattern that can help calm that worry. Because you see, it's not about getting out of the emotion. It's about working with it. It's about dancing with it. So if you have an animal, animals are amazing at all times, but they can be really even more beneficial at this point in time. Focus some energy on your animal, pet them, walk them. If you don't have an animal, when you're walking outside or opening your windows, listen for the birds. Listen for the animals outside, because it helps bring your awareness into the present moment. Obviously, with worry and anxiety, it's a high energy emotion. And what I mean by that is when we feel worry or anxiety, it's palpable in our body. We can feel it if you let yourself. In that, if you're feeling worried or anxious, go for a walk. Go for a run. If you can, hop on a bike. Use an exercise video at home. Make your body move to get out the energy. If you've already done that for the day, so to speak, because I know some people just do it for the day, and you're really anxious, do it again. You don't have to go for 30 minutes. Do it for 5. Let that anxiety move through your body. You can also clean. I don't love to clean, but I'll tell you, I've done more of it in the last couple weeks than in a long time, because I use it also as an outlet. You can create. If you've got things, I painted all the doors in my house the other day. Sounds silly, but it helped me create. I had to use a different color palette. I was trying to go for a different look on the outside of the house that we live in. And so I created, right? And then I put that into action to help me get it out of my body. You can doodle, you can sketch, you can draw pictures. You can make a photograph album. You can start a scrapbook project. There's a lot of things that you can do with respect to that. Listening to music, dancing while you listen, turn the radio on, make some music, sing a song, play an instrument. All those things help move your body and can help release some of that energy that you can have from anxiety or worry. You can also do some things like trying your hand at some gardening or planting some flowers. We underestimate that, but it's pretty amazing what it can do, because to see those little sprouts sprout up just like they always have, it gives you some sense of feeling of normalcy. I only know that because one of the first things I did when all of this began is I took a big bucket I had out back and I created an herb garden with my 8-year-old. I did that because I knew we were going to be home more. I wanted that to be an invested project that we did together. And it's paid off, maybe even more so for me than for him, because it feels so much more normal when I see the lavender sprouts come up. I'm watching the rosemary get even larger. So doing something that brings you some joy and some sense of normalcy. And finally, as you all know, I'm sure, one of the greatest things to do with that worry and anxiety is that you can create a project. It may be a project that you do for someone else or for yourself. Don't underestimate, if you need some extra TLC right now, creating a project for yourself can be very beneficial. If now is the time to repaint your bedroom, do it. If now is the time to wash all your blankets, do it. If now is the time to rearrange pictures on your walls or hang things and make things look more beautiful, do it. Those acts of kindness for yourself can pay off forever. But also helping a friend or a neighbor in ways that you can, that are helpful and that are within the guidelines, can be majorly beneficial, obviously. You can also do someone a favor, teach someone a skill. Lots of people are using virtual connection nowadays. You know, setting up, my husband's family the other day set up a Zoom call with all the family members, and they've never done that before. And what an act of kindness that was for all of them. They all benefited. There was, I don't know how many there was. I walked by that screen, and there was a lot of people on that call. He comes from a large Italian family. And there was a lot of people on there really relishing in those moments of seeing each other on a screen in a way that they, you know, haven't been able to do in weeks. And so all of those things can uplift your spirits. Think outside the box, because all of that can help with that worry and that fear and help you turn towards your connection with other people and less towards food, realistically. I'm going to go ahead and get us off lecture mode so we can talk, connect, communicate. I can answer any questions or comments and help in any way that I can.
I have a quick question about the cortisol that you just mentioned.
Sure.
Yes, I understand that exercise does reduce that, but is there anything that you can eat that reduces that, or is that a crazy question?
It's not a crazy question at all. There isn't anything that we eat that reduces cortisol. However,
so
deep breathing, really deep breathing, like yoga deep breathing, can reduce cortisol too.
Okay.
Singing and dancing can reduce cortisol. Crying can reduce cortisol. So don't make yourself cry, but... just know, don't do it on purpose. Although some people are, you know, I mean, I know a lot of us are crying just because we feel pretty helpless. But, you know, but crying does reduce cortisol. It's kind of interesting. They find it in tears. So it's in the body's natural way of trying to release that. We know it's not good for it. But so those are some other ways. I don't always like to link cortisol with quote unquote exercise, but all of those other ways can help reduce cortisol too.
Thank you.
Found a food to do it yet. Other questions, concerns, or things I can help with tonight? Anybody else?
Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
If I'm feeling stressed or worried or whatever, I tend to want to eat simple carbs like bagels or macaroni and cheese. Not that I go for them. I just feel like that's what my body is craving. Is that more of psychological or physiological?
Great question. Not knowing your background, there's definitely, so there could be a psychological implication. There's definitely a physiological implication though, because we know that simple carbohydrates increase serotonin. And serotonin,
that makes sense.
Yeah, and serotonin can convert to melatonin, which can help us sleep. But more of us, more so now, need that serotonin pop, so to speak, to help us feel more, you know, at ease when we're in worry or anxiety. So there's absolutely a physiological, biochemical reason why we crave those simple carbohydrates. And for other, you know, others of us too, there may be a psychological component. I mean, we definitely know that, you know, and this is not true for you necessarily, but obviously if you look at things like cake, birthday cake, we associate it with good times. And so it's obviously a simple carbohydrate. And so a lot of times people will want that cake because they're, you know, especially in times like this where they're so worried and anxiety ridden and things are so unpredictable that, gosh, if, you know, we could all just have a great big birthday party and celebrate something, it would feel good, right? So that can be, you know, that's more of a psychological realm of things. And again, I'm not saying that's your pull. I'm just saying that's, you know, it, you can look at it from the psychological end as well for yourself in kind of cracking the code, but definitely a biochemical component to craving those carbohydrates. And
yeah,
so,
I think it's probably a combination of both. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is for most people, one of the things you can do with it, one, from the psychological end, you can start to crack the code of like which food specifically, and I need to do a call on this, but which food specifically you crave and what they mean to you and for you. And two, also recognize that one of the other ways that we can increase serotonin and epinephrine is just by going out and moving our body quickly for a few minutes. And it doesn't have to be an exercise session. It can be hopping. You know, the other day I hopped on my bike and I rode like a mad woman for about 5 minutes. And then I just stopped and I was good. It was like Forrest Gump, you know, when he runs in that movie. My favorite movie ever. He just runs and runs and runs and then just stops. I was kind of like that on my bike, but I didn't go as far as Forrest did. and I did that because I was just feeling this surge of energy in my body and I needed to get it out. And in that, what you do is you pop serotonin on a natural way and it has nothing to do with exercise. So you think about it from a brain chemistry piece. If you're needing that serotonin pop and you're going towards food, if you simply take that need for that serotonin pop and you move it in another direction, it will allow your body to get the same thing that it needs, just in a different venue. Okay? Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent. Great question. Thank you. Anybody else? Other questions or comments or things I can help with?
Do you ever suggest to go back to, like, phase one?
To go back to phase one?
Mm-hmm. Or the beginning?
Depending on how far along somebody is and if they're really having a hard time, we have recommended that sometimes for just a couple of days and then seeing if that can help break that
plateau.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good question.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Other questions or things I can help with tonight?
Hi, I do have a quick question.
Sure.
I love these sessions. I didn't want to interrupt anyone because everyone has got really good questions. But I've missed a few of these sessions because of my work.
Yeah.
And you mentioned podcasts because I would love to go back and hear some of the other sessions that you've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what we've done, and I just launched it last week live, so to speak. It was up the week before then. I started talking about it on the calls, as some of you have heard. But we went kind of large last week and launched. We've got up, it's called Overcoming Emotional Eating with Wendy Francis. You can find it on Apple and iTunes. And we now have up 11 podcasts. And we'll be putting two new out every week. Mondays and Thursdays, they'll be launched. And so some of what I have up now are old calls around the content. And I've also been interspersing it now, though, with interviews and some of the things I've done more recently, just so that people can access things around what's real specific to our time right now, which is different and distinct. So I've been putting those up also. But you can find it on Apple, iTunes, and you can link back in. Or if you're just looking for the podcast itself, you can go to www.wendi.com. In either way, you can find those podcasts.
Okay, and it's called Overcoming
Emotional Eating.
Okay. Yes, I have been struggling with that. We have, where I'm going to work, we have like about 70 people in our work area, mm-hmm. and it's down to like two of us in the office at a time.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of eerie. I mean, they're working from home, so it's, you know, it's not too bad, but it's still, and they joke about being at home and working, you know, how they enjoy it, but it's still not normal, and it's unnerving, and people break down, and I've been trying to help them as much as I can because my heart goes out to them, but I'm finding that I've been hitting like the carbs, the candy, whatever I can find in the afternoon because I'm just so stressed out.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I'm trying to work on, is to find a healthy alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So my boss is trying to work with me too on that. So.
Yeah. And there's a couple things you could do. You know, one, make sure you're eating enough, you know, for breakfast and for lunch. And then you might actually put in a small snack earlier in the afternoon, about an hour before your cravings are hitting, to see if that helps from a physical standpoint, you know, physiological standpoint. And then maybe tapping into some of these podcasts, what, you know, or anything that's kind of uplifting, that's giving you, you know, in all of the calls that I do, I don't just bring the problem. I bring some optional solutions. And I feel like that's what we all need right now. So they're all there for you. In fact, one of the greatest things, there's so many things I'm proud of when it comes to this podcast, but episode number 10 is actually an interview I did with an old client who's lost 170 pounds and she's kept it off. And she talks not about her weight, but about how she did it and how she changed inside. And it was really an amazing, inspirational interview. So when you're feeling that, you know, disconnection from others, and we're all feeling that worry and that anxiety and that out of control piece, that, you know, holding on to people and things that are inspirational can help get us through. And it's one of the reasons why I launched this podcast right now. So use it as you can, please.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Yeah, and I'm not drinking enough water. I have found that I'm not doing that. And when I do drink my water, if I'm mm-hmm. doing it correctly, it does make a difference.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion. I was just going to leap on when she was talking about water. Mm-hmm. I posted this. I live in Colorado Springs, and this is an old, old technique. It's so simple and silly, but you carry a water jug around with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody carries those little water bottles. If you figure out how many of those you need to drink a day, like for me, I need to drink 7. I put 7 rubber bands around it. And every time I finish one, I take a rubber band off. And so then I have a visual cue of how much I have been drinking. Like midday, I should be about 3 or 4 through.
Nice.
And so I don't know if that'll help anybody. I just had to leap in on that little bit there because for me, instead of trying to keep a little tally sheet that gets lost or anything like that, I can just visually track it by looking at how many rubber bands are wrapped around that water bottle.
That's a great idea. Yeah, that's an excellent idea. I think, I mean, that's fantastic. Thank you, caller. Whenever we can take something that is you know, really obscure and make it concrete like you did in that, I think it helps our psyche. It helps us, you know, attain. And when you make that movement of actually pulling that rubber band off, you know, it cements in that, okay, one more down, right? As opposed to just thinking it, it actually gives you something to do with it. And it creates what I call a locus of control. So that's fantastic. Thank you for bringing that to the call.
And I'm sorry for interrupting that train of thought. I just wanted to get that in.
No, I'm glad you did.
Great.
I think it's fantastic.
That was awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a trick for you, caller, when it comes to your water, using those rubber bands around there and pulling them off. I think that sounds like an excellent idea.
All right, Wendy, I have a suggestion too.
Yeah.
I've been drinking the water for, I don't know, 3 years now. And I never had much of a problem with it, but it's only in the last year that I discovered that for me, and it's probably going to be true for other people, it's so much easier when I use a straw. I carry around a bottle, you know, that has 33 ounces, so I know I have to drink 2.5 of those a day or whatever, which, I, you know, my lemon tea counts in the morning, and I also have Smooth Move in the evening. So, but I know I've got to drink two bottles, and I just have a bottle with a straw, and it just goes so much faster. Sometimes I finish a bottle, I can't even believe, God, I drank a whole bottle already. So that may not be true for everybody. Some people like drinking out of a glass. I don't know. But if you're having trouble, try a straw. And you could buy on Amazon straws that are like 11 inches long, so it's great for a large bottle.
And it's true. What's so interesting about what you're saying is actually find out what works for you specifically.
Yes.
Because what's so interesting, and I've worked with this for years. I found this years ago. Because I would kind of look at what water bottles people were bringing in. And I recognized, you know, some people small holes, some people big holes, some people straws, some people no straws, some people only glasses, some people plastic, some people stainless steel. And I started to ask people, you know, hey, are you drinking all your water? And do you know if that method works for you? I got real curious. And I recognize now that how you like to drink your water is really specific to you. So for me, for example, I do better drinking it out of a largemouth cup, so to speak, and a glass cup. That's what works for me. I will get all my liquids in. However, if I've got to go out of a straw, I have a difficult time doing it. Right? Conversely, my daughter, who's 15, who's more into her health than she used to be and is trying to drink water, she can only drink it out of a straw, and then she gets water in. So playing around, even with the size, if you're drinking it through like a water bottle, the size the hole is, whether it's really small or really large or plastic or stainless steel or glass, all of that can make a difference. And my guess is it has something to do with our texture and tactile sensation that we associate with when we were young. And so we don't have to go that far back and have a therapy session on it. You can just play with all different kinds and see what works for you. And you'll find that there will be one that you'll go, oh, wow, I just drank that. I didn't realize I did that.
Yep.
And that's the key. And for you, you found that key with the straw. And so you're going with your key to success there, right, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It took me 2 years, and I only found it by accident. So I'm thrilled.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it is very true because I've worked with people for so long now, and I recognize in the first couple of years the very difference between people and where they found that, success, so to speak, with their liquid drinking. So play with different types, from glass to plastic to stainless steel, and, you know, even going from a regular straw, plastic straw, to a stainless steel straw can make a difference for some people. And they now are making stainless steel straws with plastic tips on them.
Yeah, I think you have to buy the tips separately. At least I did.
Okay. I think I saw one at Walmart the other day that it had it on it already. Mm-hmm. But it probably depends on what kind you're buying.
Yeah.
What about using ice in to make your smoothies or to drink your water? Is it okay to use regular tap water ice?
Yes, it is, because we know that it's not going to change the pH that much. I mean, unless you're using, 20 ice cubes in 4 ounces or whatever, and the ice becomes another 8. So if you're putting a couple of ice cubes in it with tap water, no worries.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great questions.
One thing I found as well is sweet leaf stevia makes all different kinds of drops, flavored drops. When I was doing water, it just became really boring. And just doing, they have cola, they have berry, they have orange, they have vanilla, and it goes on. And that helped me just get kind of over that little hump that flavored the water and made a big difference.
And it can, for somebody that doesn't like the taste of just plain water, using lemon slices or orange slices or lime slices can help too, to give it some kind of flavor if somebody doesn't have a palate that likes just the flavor of water. So yeah, if you can't get that water in, playing with it a little bit and giving some flavor, different flavor to it, can be really beneficial too, absolutely. Other questions or comments or things that I can help with this evening?
Yes, hi. Where do you access the podcast information again? I'm sorry, I missed that.
You can go, you can go on Apple, iTunes.
Okay.
So if you have an iPhone, you can find it straight on your iPhone under the podcast app, which is iTunes.
Yep.
That's the easiest way. That's the easiest way for most people's on their iPhones. You can also get iTunes on your computer and access it through iTunes on your computer as well.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Good question. Anybody else, anything else I can help with?
Yeah, what was the other way you said you could access your podcasts? It was WendyFrancis.com or something?
Yeah, so we put up a website so that people who couldn't figure out iTunes could access. It's www.WendyFrancis.com.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yep, and that's another way that if you don't have iTunes at all or you can't access it, the only problem, if you do go to the website, you just can't. Maybe that's not true. You might be able to listen on your phone, actually. I haven't tried it. So you might be able to do that. Strike that. But yes, you can either go to iTunes and download the episodes as you want to listen to them. If you do, then please subscribe, rate, and review. We love that. I'm trying to get this podcast out to as many people as possible because my mission in creating the podcast at this time was so that we can help more people who are at home. And the more we're at home, the more we're emotional, the more we turn to food. And I wanted to give people a free resource during this time period. So the more I get people subscribing and rating and reviewing, the more that iTunes will push me to the top and more people can find it. And that's what I want, is for everybody to be able to have some free resources during this time.
Great. Thank you.
Absolutely. So thank you for joining me tonight again for another episode of our emotional overeating call. I will be on live again next week at 5:00. And I will be bringing a topic that's relative. You know, right now I'm not pre-forecasting anything. I'm going week by week, and I'm here to bring things to you all. And I do that gladly. And I'm so thankful that you all have taken these precious moments out to spend with me, but more so for you to continue to uncover your best you. I'll hear you all next week. Thanks again. Take care, be safe, stay healthy, and stay loved.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.